Welcome to Top Shelf at the Merrick Library with your host, Carol Ann Tack.
Well, welcome back to Top Shelf at Merrick Library and happy spring. Spring has finally gotten here. I'm telling you, I'm looking out the window right now and it's finally springtime. And I have to always thank my listeners for coming back to join us on your favorite Top Shelf podcast. There are a lot of podcasts out there. And I'm thrilled that you choose to spend it here with us. So having said all that, today's guest is debut novelist Anne Griffin. Anne is an Irish novelist educated at the University College in Dublin, where she received her MA in creative writing. Anne's short stories have appeared in numerous publications, and you can find all of that on her website, which I'll give you the links to afterwards. You're going to want to check out that website. It's pretty amazing, and it's chock full of all of Anne's short stories, and it's pretty amazing. All of her pieces are beautiful, so I strongly urge that you check that out. And again, I'll put that link at the end of the podcast. She was awarded the John McGahern Award for Literature. I hope I said that right, Anne.
McGahern.
Sorry. New York accent. Listen, I apologize for it. You'll hear it more as we go on in the podcast. So the John McGahern Award for Literature, and that recognized previous and current works. And she's also been shortlisted for the Hennessy New Irish Writing Award and the Sunday Business Post Short Story Award. Most recently, which is one of my favorite articles that Irish Times did, they featured, when all is said, in their Best of Irish, 10 Rising Stars of Irish Writing in 2019. That's a pretty nice list, Anne. Having said all that, welcome to Top Shelf at Merrick Library. I'm thrilled to have you.
Thank you so much, Caroline. It is just a pleasure to be with you. I'm delighted.
So your debut novel, When All Is Said, is a bestseller in Ireland right now. I read it as a galley last summer, and many thanks many times over to Thomas Dunn Books and St. Martin's Press for saying yes when I asked for the galley. When All Is Said is filled with the perfect ingredients for an excellent book discussion. So anyone out there who's looking for that different book that's something special, this is the book. It's just chock full of stuff to make it very rewarding time. And I love the publisher description of When All Is Said. And with your permission, if that's okay, I'd love to share that publisher description with our listeners. So it goes like this. A tale of a single night, the story of a lifetime. If you had to pick five people to sum up your life, who would they be? If you were to raise a glass to each of them, what would you say? And what would you learn about yourself when all is said and done? Ooh, now that that's pretty exciting. When you read that, did you have any hand in putting that piece of it together? Was that all publishing stuff?
It was a bit of amalgamation of my own pitch letter, my own synopsis that I put together, and then the wonderful brains that there are in publishing in Thomas Dunn, St. Martin's Press, and also in Scepter, my UK publisher. They were brilliant. They all kind of worked together. In fact, it was the American publisher who came up with my title.
Really?
Yes. Yeah, so I have them to thank for that. But They because there was a lot, because I had a much more wordier title. And so the UK team and the American team, and I was at home here trying to figure out a better title. And the Americans just emailed me one day and said, "What about When All Is Said?" And I just went, sold, brilliant.
Really brilliant.
Yeah, brilliant.
You don't have to say, you could wave me off. Do you remember what your pitch title might have been?
Oh, no, I remember exactly what it was, because it's actually a line from the book. At the end of the first chapter, Morris says, or Maurice, I love the way people pronounce Morris in the States. Maurice.
Oh, okay.
Beautiful. Beautiful. I love it. It makes him sound so international and interesting.
It really does. Yes. And that's how I read it, that he was sort of a man of distinction based on my interpretation of his name. But we'll go with Morris. So what does he say at the end of
this? So he said, he had a line at the end of the first chapter where he says, he says the words, I'm here to remember all that I have been. And so it was that all that I have been that I chose as the title. And they everybody's saying, no, it's just a bit too wordy. We're not remembering that. We can't remember. We keep referring to your book as the Irish book as opposed to. So no. We have to do something better. And so everybody put their heads together, and it was the Americans who got the 5 gold stars. Because they got it.
Wow. See, that's a nice little teamwork there. I appreciate that. So speaking of Maurice, or as the Americans say, Maurice, the book starts with 84-year-old Maurice Hannigan hosting a glass to the 5 most important people in his life. Yeah. And instantly, from pretty much the first page, the reader is absolutely transported back to 1940s Ireland. It's a very seamless and effortless transition. So we get Maurice sitting at the bar, having these conversations with the barkeep and sort of his conversations in his own mind. And it was very, very hard to put the book down. And I tipped right into his story. And I confessed earlier to some friends and some colleagues that I read it in 3 sittings while I was on vacation, floating on a raft in Maine. and if that's a really fabulous way to read the book, but it's armchair readers all the way. Could you please tell some of our listeners what When All Is Said is about?
So it is Maurice Hannigan, who is a very successful 84-year-old Irish farmer. And he is a very single-minded man. He knows exactly what he wants out of life. And he has done well. He has made quite a bit of money, and he has quite a bit of land in County Meath. So it's a fictional town in County Meath. It's called Rainsford. And Maurice decides that he is going to sit to the bar of the local Rainsford House Hotel to drink 5 toasts to the 5 most important people in his life. And so we meet his beloved brother, who died when Maurice was 16. We meet his little baby daughter, who he only held for 15 minutes. She was unfortunately stillborn. And we meet Noreen, who is a very interesting character, is his sister-in-law, who's quite funny and really pushes people to their limits, but for some reason loves Maurice Hannigan. And then we meet Kevin. And Kevin is very important. Kevin is Maurice's son. Kevin lives in the States, in New Jersey. He emigrated there in the 80s. And he is a journalist. And Maurice can't believe that his son is a journalist, given he has dyslexia himself. And he has always had this, there's always been a bit of a problem there with Maurice and his son because of that very thing, because Maurice can't believe this man of words has come from him. And what's important also about Kevin is that Maurice is talking to Kevin in his head, because Maurice is actually, there's no one beside Maurice at the bar when he's telling these stories. It's all in his head. And the last and final and perhaps the most important person that he raises a toast to is his beloved Sadie, who died 2 years to the day. And this story, so through these 5 hours, these 5 toasts, we begin to learn just who Maurice Hannigan is and why he's sitting at the bar and what's actually going to happen around midnight. But I hope what people feel, and I think this is happening definitely, is that people are really, they're drawn to Maurice's humanity. They're drawn to Maurice's flaws because he is a deeply flawed man. But I suppose we all see ourselves in him. He is a man that is full of regrets. And I suppose a lot of what he is doing with Kevin is trying to explain who he is and why he's always been the way he is. And he's finally, for the first time, trying to admit to Kevin, you know, this is me, your father, who does love you and who's sorry, who's never been able to actually say those words to you. So it's, I hope people fall in love with Maurice or Maurice, because I certainly fell in love with writing him.
Yeah, he's really, what I love about the structure of the book is that, which is what you've just said, you've got these 5 people that he sort of pays tribute to.
Yeah.
He's apologetic. He's also about some of the ways that he's treated some people or the way he's handled the certain situations involving these very, very key people who are near and dear to his heart. And what I love is that you get the reveal. And I'm wondering if the fact that you were a short story writer or still are a short story writer, thank goodness, sort of colored how the structure of this book works, because each person Morris speaks to in his head, although it is like he's conversing with the reader. I mean, it really is like he's conversing with us. It's a slow reveal. So once you get one person, say Thomas, then you get the next person, and then there's a little bit more uncovered of Morris's background story. Did you start out writing this in a short story fashion, or how did like sort of how did this, because the structure is just brilliant. The structure is absolutely brilliant.
I was actually, I wasn't a short story writer first. I write novels. Now when I say novels, you'd swear I had 50 under my belt. I don't. So to start at the beginning, I started writing very late in life. I was 44 when I started. Okay. And at age 44, on the 1st of September, 2013, I remember the day well, I opened up my computer and I started to write, and I decided I'm going to write a book. I'm going to see if I can write 70,000 words. And I did. And that book remains in a drawer and will never come out, because what it was there for was just to prove to myself I had the stamina to do it. And so it was only after that then that I did short stories, because I realized, oh, in this writing game, I think you're supposed to write short stories and then write books. You know, it seemed like I was doing it the wrong way around. So I went back to writing short stories. So when I began to write short stories and then thought, right, I really want to get back to writing a novel, and I want the next novel to be something that I will actually be proud enough to show other people and say, well, what do you think? And I came up with this idea of this story on a holiday in Mayo, on the Greenway, which is a cycling, beautiful cycling track in Ireland. And there is quite a, there is quite an interesting story as to why I came up with this, that. So maybe I'll just tell you briefly.
Please, I would love that.
Myself and my husband and my son happened into a bar in a small village in Mayo. And there, standing at the bar, was an old man in his 70s. And he came over to chat to us. Because there was no one else in the bar. It was us, not even a barman, us and him. And he came over to talk to us, and he started to tell me, I used to work here when I was a boy, which is really interesting, but I didn't get to discuss too much with him about what exactly he did there. And but he said something to me just before he was going away, because he didn't stay with me that long, but he said the words, "I'm not going to see the morning," to me, which were incredible. And but he was gone before I could pull him back and say, well, what does that mean? So the next day we're finishing off the cycling trip. And it's pouring rain, and I'm actually cycling on my own, because it was so bad that my son was very young at the time. We had to get him in the car, and we had one bike. We had to get back to the island we were cycling to, and I said, please, I'm going to do it. So myself and my husband had this big argument in the car park, and I'm like, no, I have to do it, because I needed to make sense of what that man had said to me, make sense of it as a writer. And so as I was cycling, I was thinking, okay, man at a bar, what does a person do at a bar? They drink. And I thought, you know what? This is perfect for where I am as a writer right now. I've been practicing the short story. So I'm going to do what Donal Ryan did, and so many other people have done in their books. But Donal Ryan did it in The Spinning Heart, where he basically did 11 stories.
What a book. What a book.
Isn't it just stunning?
Oh, my goodness. It is really stunning. That's a stunner. I wasn't expecting you to say that.
He's just one of my all-time favorite writers. And I thought, there we go. Okay. Don O'Ryan did that, because I think it wasn't long since I had read that book. And I thought, okay, that gives me a structure. I'm going to choose five people. No, at the beginning, I think I had six toasts, actually. But then I worked it back to five, because I loved that thing of the five toasts, five hours, everything. I just loved it. I thought this works really, really well. And so that's where it came from. And I thought, in this way, I'm going to be able to manage these stories. And like you say, allow them feed one into another, you know, so that it is slowly unlocking what is happening in the background, what we're heading to in this story. So yeah, that's how I did it. So I, you know, as a writer, every writer I'm sure who you speak to says, you know, one of the things you must do is read. So you read and you learn from the best. You learn from people like Donal Ryan. You learn from people like Anne Tyler. You know, you just learn.
Right, right.
And that's what I did with this.
And it's funny, I wasn't expecting to hear you say The Spinning Heart, because that book was really, oof. Not, I mean, he could knock me over with a feather after that book was done, and just to read everything that he did and how we got to certain places. So that's interesting to hear that was one of the inspirations.
I mean, that pretty much happens with me though. With every Donal Ryan book that I read, I go, oh my God.
Yeah.
Whoa. You know, I kind of need a moment or two before I can get back to ordinary living again.
You have to take a nice quiet moment. Yeah. And what I love is that not only is this Morris's story, but there's also a mystery that is occurring in the background of Morris's story. And that was the way you layered that. So if you think of a rose and you think of rose petals until you get to the very heart of the rose itself, that's how I kept reading this book thinking, there's another petal, there's another petal. It was really, the way you bring that narrative in this sort of, it just sort of spins and spins and spins. It's not a spoiler to say to the readers that there is a very valuable Edward VIII gold sovereign that lies beneath the actual story. Where does that idea, how do you get that and then stick that in there?
Yeah.
I mean, you made it work.
I loved that part of the book. Loved it. That was such great fun. Because what I wanted with that gold mine, it needed to represent for me how Morris's life continued to be intertwined with this family that he really hated, that who he worked for when he was a boy. So I needed him to stay with them in some way against his will. And so there were two things. One was that in the end, the tables turned and he became the richer and he was beginning to buy their land. But I wanted something else. And so I thought, I need him to rob something from that house. And it needs to be small. It needs to be something that's going to stick in a pocket that nobody will see, that he can hide somewhere. And so that's when I went online and started to Google about coins. And there is, in fact, these sovereigns out there, these Henry VIII sovereigns. Now, I for the purposes of the book, said there's only six. There may be many more.
Right,
I created this seventh sovereign that is the one that Morris steals and weaves its way through the book. But the little story behind the Edward VIII sovereign that is actually true and I loved finding out about was that when Edward VIII sat for this for the minters to get the profile done for the coin. Now, I don't know if people know that he is the king who abdicated. This coinage became known as the coinage that never was because he obviously abdicated, so it never went into circulation. But he's sitting for the minters, and the minters are saying, all right, King Edward, could you please face this way? And he's saying, no, I'm not going to face that way. Because he said, that's not my good profile. I look awful that way. I need to go the other way. And they're saying, well, no, Your Majesty, I'm afraid it is the tradition that you must go the opposite way to your predecessor. And he just refused because he had such an ego about himself. So I just love this coin. I love how important it becomes in the book for both families. And I love the gentle reveal of it. And I love that Noreen, who is that character.
She was great.
Yes, I loved her. And I loved that it was her who brought this coin back to Morris's life. And he's like, oh, God, I stole that when I was younger. Oh, my goodness. And this started this whole other story and this whole new connection with this family.
And the best part about that whole sovereign story is that it fits so seamlessly into Morris's life. It's almost... For someone who invented, so for someone who creating this, for as you creating this fiction, it's perfect. It blends. It's beautiful. It really works. And so you've got this, what's Morris going to do? He's toasting these people, but whatever happened to that coin? And what's going on there? So you've got these two things at work. And that's why when I say you can't put it down, I think it's partly because of this mystery in the background. Now, have you been out on a lot of book tours talking about the book? Have you been doing any of that yet?
I have in Ireland and the UK. I've been very lucky to be over in London quite a bit. I was in Scotland. I'm going to be heading back to Scotland soon. But I've got a couple of festivals now. Festival season is kicking in Ireland. So I'll be going off to the wonderful Listowel Festival, which is our main festival here, one of our main festivals.
Lovely, lovely.
All the other festivals will kill me for saying it's our main one. Oh. It's the one that people, I think it's our most known.
Right, got it. And have you, with your interactions with people and with readers, what's sort of the most surprising thing, or what are people saying about Morris? I don't want to give away the ending. I don't want to spoil any of it. But what's been that surprising reaction that you weren't expecting to get? Has there been anything yet? There's time.
Not necessarily. There was a really great comment in London, in Covent Garden in London, when I did an event there in the Waterstones. And one woman said, actually, I think this book is about the women in Morris's life, because, you know, about Molly and about actually Emily Dollard.
Yes.
And about Sadie, the importance of those women. And, you know, how they gave solidity to Morris, how they gave support to Morris, how they almost made him human.
That's actually a very interesting comment. Yeah.
Yeah. So I thought that was really good. And I was like, oh, yeah, I did. I did that. That was on purpose. Yes, I did.
Yeah. We'll go with that.
It is really brilliant when you get into conversation with people about your book, because they see stuff that you didn't see, then that, yes, you wrote, but for some reason it's resonated with them more, you know. So that's always surprising, which bits resonate with people
each time you read it. We had been talking earlier, I read the first time for pleasure, the second time, wow, did I really just read that? And then the third time is, I better get these names right in my head, because I'm actually interviewing the author, so I should really remember all of this. And each read, I took something different away. And I said, I forgot about that particular thing or that part of the book. So it's always nice to do that. So is Morris generally well received, would you say?
I think he is. I think there are, there was one woman who I met who said, I did not like him at all. I did not like him at all. And she was in a book group, and they had all come to the local library where I was giving a reading. And the rest of the book group had liked it, but she came up to tell me she really, really didn't like him and really wanted me to know that. But she said, after listening to you read, I'm going to give him another go. On the whole, yes, I have to say people really do like him. And I think it's that thing of, he's just incredibly flawed. You know,
and he embraces it, and we're sort of going along with him. And it's up to the reader to decide how much forgiveness you're willing to bestow.
Exactly.
Is what it comes down to. And it's not unlike reading in a book discussion here. We read Olive Kittredge, and the room was divided between people who absolutely, they kept saying, I hate, you know, we just didn't like this book. And I said, well, did you not like the book, or did you not like Olive? Because that's the difference.
And I get that. Yeah. Right.
So I think the people who either, I'm in team Olive, obviously, but it's just interesting that, because I was wondering, I thought, people are not going to like Morris. There will be those who sort of think of him as just being a certain way. And
I worried about that, but I have to say the fact that I've managed to be on the bestseller list for a long time
is working.
It's okay. It's okay. They really do like him. And they do in the end.
Yeah.
They don't agree with everything he does.
Right.
And neither do I.
Right.
I mean, I wrote him and I don't agree with half some of the stuff that he would have done. And but at the same time, we're not all goody two shoes. And there was a side to Morris that, you know, he had his issues.
Right. Well, and I also think that we never really see ourselves. And So I feel like for Morris at the end, him sort of going back over time and his some of his interactions with Sadie, you just really want to strangle him. But right, so if you're in your, like me, if you're in your early, you know, your early 50s, you can sort of go back and say, oh, I should have handled that better. I should have done that better. But in the moment, you're just sort of, you're being reactive instead of being proactive. And that's that's humanity, right? So I feel like Morris is all of us in some way coming to deal with all of the things that he's done.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I mentioned at the top of the podcast that the Irish Times had a list and they mentioned two important things about when all is said. One of them is that Graham Norton is also a fan of the book. Now, I have to admit, this is really embarrassing. I don't even know if it's embarrassing, but I am a huge fan of his show. If I am having a down moment, or I will just turn that on, I have them recorded. And I don't know how big he is over in the UK. I don't know how big he is in Ireland. I don't know any of that. What did you think of that when you read that? I mean, that's because he's writing himself, right? He's got a new second book coming out.
Yeah. So his second book's already come out here and I had read it and I really rate him as a writer. I think he's amazingly good. I mean, he is huge over here.
He's
enormous over here. I mean, we love him. We love him and he's so funny.
He is so funny.
And I was in a shop. I was in a bookshop the day I read that tweet that he liked my book. And I wanted to, as I was in the queue, I wanted to shout over to the booksellers going, Graham Norton, just tweet about my book. So it's been brilliant. It's been wonderful. He's been really supportive. He's given me a great quote. He even brought me on his Radio 2 show.
Oh, I have to find BBC. That. I did not know that.
Yeah. So you have to go through the whole program. His programs are great. They go on for a couple of hours, but I'm the last one on the program. But so I got to go over and meet him, and he is genuinely a really good guy. You know, you just feel like you're sitting in a room with a mate with him, you know, and we had the crack and we had, you know, a few laughs and he was very good and very generous to me because not many debut authors go on his show. That's not what it's for. He gets the big stars going on his radio show, just like he gets on his TV shows. But he brought me on and it was great. It was fantastic. It would be like Oprah saying, "Hey, I love this book." You know, whoa,
right. Yeah. It would knock you over. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think about that. So even though he has quote unquote, the big stars and the celebrities, I guess he knows a fledgling when he sees one. So good on you, Anne. Good on you. Good for you. And then the second thing the article mentioned is that there is perhaps a new title in the works that's expected for next year. You can say, no, I'm off limits. We're not talking about that. And that would be absolutely fine. I have other questions. The article actually gives us a spoiler about the book.
I know. And I didn't realize that was going to happen. But go on.
But I'd rather readers hear it from you if you feel so inclined.
I'm going to be very circumspect about
Please.
It. Is
okay, really understood.
But yes, it's in the works.
Okay,
it's
great.
In the works, and the hope is definitely. I know from the UK, they're talking May 2020. I don't know what it is for the States, but yes, it is set in Ireland. It's modern day Ireland. It's a female voice this time, and she's a young woman. And I will give you her name because I am in love with her name. Her name is Jeannie Longley.
Oh.
Beautiful. So, but that's it. But it's in the world. I am literally knee deep in that book at the minute, having all of the stresses and all of the meltdowns about the second book and the expectations and all of that.
Well, and then I'm so sorry, but I really appreciate that that you're here taking time out of your day to do this. I really am. And of course, I will shamelessly ask for a galley when the time comes. So since you're knee deep and doing all of this, do you have is there any plan to come to the States at any time?
Oh, look, I would come. Yes. I would come. Yeah, I definitely. I'd be, I'd be, I'm, I just love meeting people who've read my book, so I will go to the ends of the earth. So
okay, great. You know,
there might be something. I have nothing, unfortunately, to deliver in terms of
at this point. So, but listeners can sort of find any future engagements on your website.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's mainly Irish and UK stuff up.
All right, great. I just wanted to, there was one more thing I wanted to, I have to let you go, I know. I wanted to mention about another article that you contributed to the Irish Times, to Irish Times that you contributed to back in January of this year. And you talk about your love of writing and the authors who inspire and continue to inspire you. Mary Lawson, Jonathan Coe, Richard Russo, who actually I just found out has a new book coming out.
What's the new book?
I can't remember the name right now, but I will certainly let you know.
Oh my goodness. He's my all-time favorite writer.
Yeah, we were just talking about it on a galley chat with a bunch of librarians yesterday, so I'm going to have to try to find it. But he does have a new book coming out.
Oh my goodness.
The reading world is just going insane.
Right. But can I tell you something about that? I know I'm interrupting you.
Please.
So because I am like, I think Ireland's greatest Richard Russo fan. Okay. Every time I go to a book festival or do any reading and I'm asked this question, who is your favorite writer? I go, okay, I want a show of hands. Who here has read Richard Russo? And I tell you now, two hands have gone up. Two hands in all of the times that I have asked that in both the UK and Ireland, particularly Ireland. I don't know what it is. He just hasn't made that.
Really?
Yeah. And I'm going, this guy's a Pulitzer Prize winner. You know, how do we not know him? So I feel like I am a salesman for Richard Russo over here in Ireland at the minute, because I just think he nails dialogue. He nails humor. He nails humanity. I just think he gets it. And I love him. And I'm always on YouTube trying to look at, you know, who is he giving an interview to now? Because I love it because, you know, I think I'm never going to meet the man.
Oh, wow. Well, now we don't know that. You never know. Maybe Graham Norton will have you both on once.
Maybe.
Maybe we can make that happen. Maybe we can make that happen.
Yeah. Throwing that out there in case anybody knows him.
I'm trying to find. Okay. So there is a new Richard Russo novel coming this summer. And I'm just doing my darndest to try to find it. I think it's called Straight Man, maybe.
Straight Man was one of his earlier.
Yeah, that was the earlier one. So. Oh, here it is. It's called Chances Are. I'm going to sort of hold this up so you can maybe see the book cover.
Oh, superb. Well, you know, Caroline, this has been so well worth it.
All this time.
Now I will be holding my breath until summer because he is just superb.
Right. And we're all very excited about it.
Good. I'm glad to hear that.
So Richard Russo and... does Jonathan Coe have a new book coming out?
So Jonathan Coe, wrote this book called Middle England.
Yes, which is
amazing.
Amazing.
Amazing. Because it's about Brexit and where Brexit came from. And so it's like the best explanation of Brexit. But in the same way as Richard Russo does humor so well, Jonathan Coe does it exceptionally well. Also, but that kind of British humor. And so basically with both of those writers, I spend my time just chuckling away as I'm reading. So Jonathan Coe is really good.
And just last night got the approval, the e-galley approval. So when I'll be starting that this weekend, so my family will not see me at all. is there anything else you'd like to mention? Any upcoming appearances? Well, we know that you're sort of in the middle of all of this, the second book.
No, I'm just really, really grateful that you got in touch, Caroline. I'm just so grateful that you loved Mars so much.
Loved it.
You've given me the airplay here. It's wonderful.
It's fabulous. I can't thank you enough for stopping your day and the muck and the mire of the beautiful new novel that you're writing. No pressure. Listeners, you can find Anne Griffin on her homepage. It's called annegriffinwriter.com. I will provide all of Anne's links on the podcast page for episode 28. And of course, I will include a place for you all to place your book reserves so you can get that right away. And like I said, I think it's just the perfect book for book discussions. it's chock full of everything, all sorts of family conflict and family joy wrapped up at the same time. And it's done beautifully well. So, Anne, I can't thank you enough for joining us today on Top Shelf.
Thank you, Carolyn.
Okay, remember, folks, you can follow us on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and wherever you find most podcasts. Don't forget to check out the Merrick Library website at www.merricklibrary.org. Special thanks, as always, to Merrick Library Director Ellen Firer and the Merrick Library Board of Directors for getting us off the ground and onto the airwaves. Until next time, remember to keep us on your top shelf.